and I promise everybody or else I'll go in the goddamn grave. You will never see that piece of shit again.
Sunday, Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle hums, ready to race to you. These days are
happy days.
These happy days are yours and mine.
Happy days are here again. Those are the words of Vince Russo you heard at the beginning of the podcast there. Quite prophetic coming from him, seeing as how he was calling somebody else a piece of shit that you would never see ever again. And now, 12 years later, he finds himself in the exact same situation. Now, any other week, this would be the top story, but we have an unbelievable avalanche of news to get to here this week. This is episode 206 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Elimination Chamber Sunday, February 19th. 2012. Let's start out with the Elimination Chamber emanating this weekend from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It is the last stop on the road to WrestleMania, and an event that saw one of its main events take a big hit this week with the news that Randy Orton suffered a concussion on Raw Monday night. He was hit by Daniel Bryan from behind with a championship belt clobbered in the back of the head. As such, he will not be cleared in time to compete in the SmackDown Chamber match for the World Heavyweight Championship. And on SmackDown this week, Teddy Long signed a Battle Royal that was open to members of either brand to determine who would fill the spot left vacant by Orton. Now, at first, the belief was that Mark Henry would be replacing Orton. He was being called back early yet again, which he was. That was the original plan. Mark Henry was brought to SmackDown. He appeared on SmackDown, even though he was supposed to be getting some time off to recover from the groin injury that just won't heal because he's been wrestling on it when he really shouldn't have been. So he was called back. He did appear on SmackDown, as I said. It was in a backstage segment getting knocked out by the Big Show. And boy, has that done wonders for Henry's unstoppable monster character or what? I mean, how many fucking times has he been knocked out and made to look like a fool by Big Show? Anyway, he was thankfully spared having to wrestle in a chamber match with an injured groin, so who would end up taking Orton's spot? That was the big question. Perhaps Christian is a name that's popped up a lot recently. You know, it would make sense, seeing as how he's ready to return any day now from his ankle injury, and he still wants his one more match for the title. You want some comedy? You could always go that route. I wouldn't necessarily advise it, but if you want a comedy, how about the Funkasaurus? You know, he hasn't been on TV the past couple of weeks. He can finally show some of that killer instinct that we've seen shades of. Now, I guess we know why Brodus Clay wasn't picked, and I'm going to have something to say about that a little bit later on in the show. If not comedy, if not the Funkasaurus, why not William Regal? This was an idea that I floated on Twitter and Facebook earlier in the week. You know, Regal has been lobbying on Twitter for months that he deserves one last shot at being world champion before he retires. Now, in this case, he wouldn't win, but you could tease some great near falls. And even better, you could set up a spot where he and his protege, Daniel Bryan, go at it. I mean, I'd pay to see that. So Regal, I think, would have been, kind of a nice dark horse pick. You know, I saw the end of SmackDown. Santino got a great reaction. He's over with the fans. I'm not saying that if you would have put Regal in that Battle Royal and had him win, that he would have gotten the same reaction. He would not have. You didn't even necessarily have to do a Battle Royal. I think Regal in that spot could have been a much better fit than what they went with. And what they went with was Santino Marella. Santino Marella won a Battle Royal. He eliminated David Otunga. He gets to take Orton's place in the chamber tonight on pay-per-view. Now, it is entirely possible, if not even plausible, that Santino never makes it into the chamber at all. You know, he may be attacked before entering, a la Kofi Kingston a few years ago when Edge took his spot. Maybe it'll end up going to Drew McIntyre or Christian or somebody like that. I guess we'll see. I mean, Christian tweeted a picture earlier today of what appears to be a postcard from Milwaukee, the site of tonight's pay-per-view. I like Santino. He's one of the few genuinely funny people who can pull off comedy on WWE TV. The fans love him. So I'm not going to throw a fit about him being in the chamber match. I think, if anything, he's going to be the most over guy in that chamber match. People are going to be clamoring to see Santino Marella win the World Heavyweight Championship. People like rooting for an underdog. They always have, and they always will. Again, if you saw the end of SmackDown this week, it was a fun moment. It really was. I mean, I would question bringing a comedy character into your World Championship match, but I'm not even going to bother. You know, this was an unexpected turn of events, losing one of their biggest stars to injury less than a week before the show. Shit happens. I'm not going to bash them for it. I just would have handled it a little bit differently. I think there's something to be said for the fact that we're in the middle of WrestleMania season here. And if you wanted to do something like this with Santino any other time of year, I would say, okay. But it's WrestleMania. You know, we're supposed to take things seriously right now. We're on the road to the biggest show of the year. So putting Santino Marella in this spot, even though, again, I think the fans will be cheering for him, he'll probably be the most over guy in that chamber match, which, by the way, doesn't say a whole hell of a lot for the other people in that chamber match. I disagree with the timing of it, but again, I'm not going to tear WWE down. Oh my God, what a shitty company. I can't believe they made this decision. Orton got hurt. This was not the plan. So I'll cut him some slack for it. Now, as far as the rest of the chamber card is concerned, let's do some quick predictions here. In the SmackDown Elimination Chamber match, which I just talked about, we've got Daniel Bryan defending the World Heavyweight title against Big Show, Santino, Great Khali, Wade Barrett, and Cody Rhodes. I'm going to go with Daniel Bryan in this match. I would love to see Daniel Bryan defend the World Championship at WrestleMania, be it against Sheamus or Orton or whoever it may be. Would not shock me if they switched the title off of him. You know, oftentimes WWE likes to do things to shock people. If they think people know what's going to happen, they'll swerve them by having somebody else win. Conventional wisdom probably has Daniel Bryan winning. I cannot see Santino Marella winning no matter what. For Big Show to win the championship, he's been in the hunt for it now for many months. To me, if you're going to do something with Big Show and Shaq at WrestleMania, which I believe is still the plan, switching the title onto Big Show makes no sense unless you're going to give Shaq a title shot. And to put the title on Big Show only to bounce it back to Daniel Bryan, let's say on TV this week, for all the times the championship changed hands in 2011, they need to keep this title on one person. I mean, if Bryan's going to lose it at WrestleMania, let him lose it at WrestleMania. He should not lose it here unless you've got a long-term plan for it. Khali, I mean, for Christ's sake, he doesn't even deserve to be in this match. Barrett, Rhodes, the time is not right. Bryan should go over here. Raw Chamber match. CM Punk defends the WWE title against Chris Jericho, Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, R-Truth, and Kofi Kingston. Quite a motley crew of participants here. I'm going to go and pick Chris Jericho in this match. Again, I think it makes more sense for CM Punk as the babyface to go into WrestleMania challenging Jericho for the championship. It adds fuel to the fire between them in this back-and-forth feud between Jericho and Punk, who is the best in the world. Jericho also needs a big win. He really hasn't had that one big win since he came back. Obviously, he lost to Sheamus at the end of the Royal Rumble. Putting the title on Jericho and having him defend Punk, of course, can cash in his rematch at WrestleMania, so it makes perfect sense. Miz is in the doghouse. Miz went into WrestleMania as the champion last year. Didn't do anything for me. Miz has been awful of late, the exact opposite of awesome. He does nothing for me. And it's not just the botched spot with R-Truth. I'll talk about the match he had with Punk a little bit later on Raw this week, which I thought was fucking boring. You've got Truth, you've got Kofi. You know, Kofi, I think, will have maybe a breakout performance. He'll probably have that one big move. Maybe he clings to the cage and does some sort of flip dive or something like that. But to me, it's got to be either Punk or Jericho, and I'm just going to go with Jericho. Kane and John Cena will have their ambulance match. John Cena, I just can't see anybody else going over in this match. I mean, I guess they could put Kane over if there's some sort of swerve at the end, maybe where Eve turns heel. Zack Ryder may play a role in the finish in some way, although I don't know how since he can barely move, apparently. I hate this feud. I hate this feud with a passion. It sucks. It's stupid. It makes no sense. But John Cena is going into WrestleMania in the main event. He is having a match with The Rock. And so you would think that to culminate, to bring this feud to an end, with any outcome other than John Cena standing victorious, even though I know the idea of John Cena standing tall is one that probably makes people want to just retch and vomit, but it makes sense here. John Cena needs a big win going into WrestleMania with The Rock. For Kane to win this match, I'm not quite sure what sense that makes, and since it's an ambulance match, it certainly sounds to me like this is the blow-off of the feud. I certainly hope so. So whatever the outcome is, whatever storyline bullshit they throw our way at the pay-per-view, I'm going with John Cena in this match. He needs to win. He needs to move away from this. He needs to get things going with The Rock. Because all roads lead to WrestleMania. That's what it's all about. You can't have John Cena going into the main event, going into one of the biggest matches in WrestleMania history, a loser. So he has to win here. Beth Phoenix will defend the Divas title against Tamina Snuka. That is her new name, by the way. It is Tamina Snuka. They're finally acknowledging her last name. I wish they would do the same with McGilliguddy and call him Joe Hennig. Beth Phoenix wins here. I'm going to go with Beth, I think. I think, you know, if they give them a couple of minutes, they could probably have a pretty good match. I mean, Tamina doesn't seem all that bad in the ring. But again, I want to see Beth Phoenix defend the championship at WrestleMania either against Natalya or Karma. I don't know what Karma's timetable is as far as her her comeback. I know she made that one appearance at the Rumble. But if she can come back in time for Mania, I think Beth and Karma is probably the biggest Divas match right now that you could do, aside from Beth and Natalya. Beth needs to be the champion in order to make that happen. So I'm going to go with Beth Phoenix here. So that's the rundown for the pay-per-view. Only four matches. I would imagine they'll add one or two more once they go on the air. Probably Sheamus makes sense for him to have a match. It won't mean much. Obviously, the whole idea is that Sheamus will announce probably on Raw this Monday night who he will be challenging at WrestleMania for what championship. But they could put another match or two on the show, maybe Sheamus and Jack Swagger or some other meaningless match, so we'll find out. Let's move on to other matters. Let's move on to the other top story of the week here. I kind of led off the show with it. I've been waiting to talk about this. In fact, I've been waiting to talk about this for years, and I am very happy that the time has finally come. If there was any other week, I could spend an hour talking about this story, but I will try to keep it brief. TNA President Dixie Carter announced the following on Tuesday. This was on her Twitter, her Facebook, all that stuff. She said, TNA and Vince Russo have mutually parted ways as of this week. The separation is amicable and professional. We are glad for the opportunity to have worked together and wish each other nothing but good luck and success in the future. It's worth noting that Vince Russo's son, Will, who also worked on the production side for TNA, is also gone. He quit the company after finding out about his father's departure. There is some discrepancy about whether or not Vince Russo quit. Was he fired? I tend to believe that he was forced into quitting, so kind of a little bit of both. You know, Dixie Carter has been fiercely loyal to Russo for years, for reasons unknown to me, and has always refused to let him go. And I think the really telling sign was bringing in Hulk Hogan and bringing in Eric Bischoff, who always have had no love lost for Russo, and the fact that Russo stayed. I mean, one of the first things I think we all thought would happen once Hogan and Bischoff came in was that Russo would get the boot, and that never happened. And that was because of Dixie Carter. You know, that always told me that if Russo were to ever leave, it would likely be his decision to do so. You know, I believe when TNA brought in David Lagana, who once wrote television for WWE as part of the SmackDown brand many years ago, they brought Lagana in November. And they put Bruce Prichard, of course, many months back in charge of the creative process. Russo saw the writing on the wall, is what I think. And it was only a matter of time. You know, he felt marginalized, and at some point something had to give. Even though Russo was still part of that creative nucleus in TNA, once Prichard was put in charge of the overall creative vision, he didn't have the same power and the same authority that he once did. And Russo doesn't like working like that. You know, Russo at one point had left TNA to go back to WWE, and the famous story, you know, he literally lasted a day. You know, he came in all gangbusters and thought he was going to run the whole operation and tell people what to do. And he found out that that's not the way things work in WWE. He's part of a team. He's part of a committee. He doesn't like working as part of a committee. So he never did go back to WWE. He ended up eventually coming back to TNA. And so now we have this situation where he feels like the walls are closing in. He's feeling marginalized. They're bringing in all these other people. And again, my gut tells me it wasn't so much, you know, Dixie Carter saying, hey, you're fired. But they made the situation such that they knew Russo was not going to last very long. And when he gave indications that he was going to leave, they either let him do so or they decided, okay, there's our opening. We're going to cut bait. We're going to get rid of him right now and just wash our hands of the whole thing. So I was going to give Dixie Carter the sound-off salute this week for actually showing some guts and getting rid of Russo. But the more I thought about it and the more I hear these reports, it's still up in the air about whether or not she actually fired him. I don't think she did. I don't think Dixie Carter ever would have fired Vince Russo, but it doesn't matter. The end result is the same. Russo is gone, likely for good. I don't see Russo coming back to TNA like he did last time. You know, he had a couple of stints with them. I think that's it. I think the Russo era has officially come to an end. I don't think Vince McMahon would welcome him back. I don't know that there's any bad blood or animosity there. I shouldn't say that. Nothing would shock me anymore. You know, if I went online in a couple of weeks or a couple of months and there was a big story on WWE.com about Vince Russo coming back, I can't say that I would be shocked. I guess I would be shocked by the stupidity of it, because I think Russo did a very good job himself from the moment he set foot in WCW to his time in TNA. he did a very good job all by his lonesome of proving that those years in WWF, at the peak of the Attitude Era, an era that he likes to take credit for, and he gives credit to Austin and Rock, and, you know, he did a shoot interview where he said he was surrounded by a lot of talented people, and those guys had every bit as much to do with the resurgence of that company in the late 90s. But he likes to take credit for it as well. It was his vision. You know, people, he can't understand why people crap on him all the time. Here he is, the savior of WWF, responsible for the Attitude Era, and that is only partially true. Only partially true. He went to WCW, he failed. He went to TNA, and God knows how many fans TNA has chased off over the years. People have been clamoring for an alternative to WWE. And, you know, at his peak, go back to those early days of TNA, a Russo specialty was that everything had to have realism to it. I'm a fan of realism, but Russo's idea of realism, and you can go and find a million examples of this. You can find it in WCW. I talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Somebody brought it up in the mailbag. Remember the match between Kevin Nash, I think it was, and Bill Goldberg, where Goldberg walked out in the middle of the match, and you've got the announcers and Scott Hudson and Tony Schiavone or Mark Madden, whoever it was on commentary, talking about, that wasn't in the script. I can't tell you how infuriated shit like that made me. Vince Russo, for all the credit he loves to give himself, or for all the credit he can understand that people don't give him for bringing wrestling to heights never seen before and helping wrestling, he did every bit as much to tear it down with his just awful juvenile bullshit writing. Wrestling is not something people want to watch and be beaten over the head with the fact that it's fake. And Russo always did this stuff where he would come out, had to do a shoot interview. Let's shoot. Let's do a shoot interview. Let's curse. Let's do a shoot interview and we'll curse and we'll throw some fucks and some bullshits and sons of bitches and everything else in there, and it'll shock people, you know? He's the Howard Stern of wrestling. We're going to shock people and that'll bring in the viewers. Let's talk about going against the script. There was a promo. Russo had a feud in WCW with Bill Goldberg. Of course, Russo put himself in a feud with Goldberg. And Russo was not the performer Vince McMahon was. You could say Vince McMahon, like every other promoter, Bischoff back in the day, they made themselves a television character, they tried to get themselves over at the expense of the other talent. Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff, for all of their faults, at least had a certain charisma. They had a certain ability to play a cocky, arrogant, smarmy heel and ultimately get their ass kicked, and they were very good at that. And Russo, I don't want to say that Russo was the worst television character of all time. Russo also had that quality that made you want to see him get his ass kicked. But not on that same level. But here's Russo putting himself in a feud back in the day with Bill Goldberg. And I'm sure somebody can dig this up on YouTube and post it on Facebook or something. But they were promoting some pay-per-view. And there was like this 30-second pay-per-view promo. And The voiceover guy in the ad actually said, this was part of the advertisement. He talked about going against the script. You know, I think they were referring actually to what happened with this Goldberg-Nash match and how Goldberg went against the script. And at this next show, what's going to happen? Is he going to stick to the script? It was something completely ridiculous. I mean, I remember watching this thinking to myself, what the fuck is this? How can something like this happen? I mean, how does nobody look at this and say, whoa, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. This is not wrestling. You don't build a wrestling pay-per-view by talking about, oh, is somebody going to go against the script? But this was Russo's idea of shocking people. The Russo swerve, it's become a euphemism in wrestling. I mean, it has a life of its own. Anytime there's a swerve, it's the Russo swerve. Because when you have something that works and you start to abuse it and use it all the time, it doesn't work anymore. And the sad part about it is that, you know, if you read stories and people that worked with Russo before, the guy has some good qualities. You know, he was known for doing a very good job of scripting dialogue in promos for the younger guys in TNA. And even back, you know, during the WWF days, the WCW days, he genuinely wanted help get younger talent over. There's a reason he had a dislike or a disdain for people like Hulk Hogan, because he could see these guys were holding down younger talent. He wasn't wrong in that assessment, and Russo wanted to help get those younger guys over. Viagra on a pole matches are not the way to go about doing that. Changing Hugh Morris to General Erection, for fuck's sake, is not a way to get guys over. It's a way to get off. You want to get off? go in the bathroom and grab a nudie magazine and get off. Don't do this shit on television because, you know, Booker T, G.I. Bro. I mean, really now, this is the guy who thought he was going to turn around WCW's fortunes. And all he did was drive that company into the ground. And in TNA, he certainly was not helping them get over anymore. TNA has been stuck in a rut for years. And the problem is, it's not just Russo. It's not, you know, Russo's gone, so now TNA is going to, you know, double their rating and their fortunes are going to change. I'll be honest with you, I don't think much is going to change in TNA. And some of their television shows of late have actually been very good. And you may credit that to the fact that Russo has not been in charge of the creative process for a few months. That's Bruce Pritchard. Eric Bischoff has more input into things now. Now that Russo is completely gone, we'll see what happens with Lagana, if he maybe gains power. Lagana hasn't taken over Russo's duties yet. He will. It's inevitable that he will at some point. At that point, we'll be able to get a better sense of what direction TNA is headed in. All I know is this. TNA may soar to heights that we've never seen before. TNA may end up dying a death in a couple of years. You never know what's going to happen. Maybe the new creative direction of the company is even worse than it was before. And with Eric Bischoff having more power now than ever before, and Bischoff doesn't exactly have a sterling track record either. People like to give him a lot of credit for turning WCW around. He had one good idea. He had one good idea that he stole from New Japan, and it worked out well for him, and it made him millions of dollars. Point to me. Give me three other great examples of things that Eric Bischoff did. Bill Goldberg? Okay, I'll give you that. I don't even know if Bill Goldberg and the whole idea of Goldberg streak and all that, I don't even know if that was Bischoff's idea. I think WCW lucked into that. But I'll give you Goldberg. Give me two other examples of great characters or great angles that really did wonders for that company that Eric Bischoff came up with. So I still worry about TNA's future. I'm not saying that the company all of a sudden is going to do a complete 180 and be an unbelievably entertaining wrestling company with great shows every single week. There's still going to be a lot of bullshit to complain about. But my point is this. With Vince Russo now divorced from the company altogether, TNA is going to sink or swim on its own. People can no longer blame Vince Russo for the ills of TNA wrestling. And it may take a couple of months. You know, we'll see what happens with Lagana and the whole structure and who really does have power in terms of the creative process in TNA. But Russo is gone. You can no longer blame him. You can no longer make him a scapegoat if that's what's been happening. Maybe Russo has been getting the raw end of the stick and he's been made a scapegoat for other people's issues, for other people's problems, for other people's bad ideas. We're going to find out really quickly. But I do know one thing. Vince Russo's idea of what pro wrestling is not my idea of what pro wrestling should be. I don't think it's the idea of what many people listening to the show think pro wrestling should be. How somebody like him has been able to maintain a position of power in the wrestling industry for as long as he has, I don't have an answer for you. I give the guy a lot of credit. I don't know if he had naked pictures of somebody or what the deal was. I think he was running off a reputation that he did not deserve. And I think he made, you know, he parlayed that into a very nice career for himself. He had a nice run. And guess what? The Vince Russo era has come to an end. And I, for one, am very happy about that. I want to give an update here on the condition of Jesse Sorensen, who was injured at the TNA Against All Odds pay-per-view a week ago. I want to give Sorensen the sound-off salute this week. He's shown great improvement after fracturing his C1 vertebrae at the show in a match against Zema Ion. Zema Ion executed a moonsault from the, I believe it was the middle rope, onto Sorensen, who was standing outside the ring. Unfortunately, it was a part of the ring outside where there wasn't a lot of room, and I think from the looks of it, Ion may have realized that in mid-flight and tried to adjust himself, and unfortunately, when he came down knees first, right on top of Jesse's head, and just crashed down on this poor guy. And he's said to be slowly regaining the feeling in his legs. Doctors now expect him to make a full recovery. Kurt Angle on Twitter noted that he visited with Sorensen in the hospital when he was still there. And doctors said that it could take up to 1 year for him to fully recover. Kurt Angle, of course, thinks he could be back in tip-top shape in about 4 months. Yeah, in Kurt Angle recovery time, perhaps, he can be in tip-top shape. This is the same Kurt Angle who opted against spinal fusion surgery that would have kept him out of action for a year, in favor of a quick fix that kept him out for 3 months and was undone by one chair shot to the skull. So let's hope Sorensen takes as much time as he needs to heal properly and is able to return to the ring. He has since left the hospital, which is a good sign. He's been sent home to recover, so best of luck to him. You hate it when something like that happens. It was a really scary situation, and again, hopefully he'll end up okay. Whether he comes back and wrestles or not is really irrelevant. As long as he can recover and, you know, walk and lead a normal life, that's really the most important thing. I know Dixie Carter flew Jesse's mother down to Florida to be with him at the hospital, which was a nice gesture on her part. And I hate to be cynical about this, but I have to raise this question. I wonder if TNA is footing the bill for at least the initial tests that were done at the hospital, if not for his entire hospital stay. You know, because even if they are under no obligation to do so, it's the right thing to do. And TNA has a well-documented history of not paying for these things and wrestlers getting bills, you know, months later for medical costs that they have to pay out of their own pocket. You know, go back and listen to Sound Off 156 if you want an eye-opening expose of how TNA has treated its talent in the past. Actually, that was 50 episodes ago, to be exact. So go back and listen to that if you haven't already. You know, Jesse Neal recently left the company, and he shared a similar experience he had after a hospital visit. My view is that if you're injured on the job, especially through no fault of your own, because really, if you look at it, it wasn't Jesse's fault, at least it doesn't seem like it. I mean, I don't know that it was anybody's fault. It was a freak accident, but if anything, that's on the guy executing the move. If you're not coming down properly and you don't have yourself properly positioned, you know, that's not the guy down below is just trying to catch you and not, A, kill himself and make sure that you don't go splat. And I don't see how that's Jesse's fault. So especially if it's no fault of his own, you shouldn't be stuck with that burden. You know, it's not like these guys are getting paid millions of dollars. This is, you know, he was in the hospital for several days, and he's got a long road of recovery ahead of him. It's not the poor guy's fault. I mean, like I said, I hate to be cynical about this, but it's a valid question. I haven't heard anybody talking about it. I guess in due time we'll see what happens. But I would certainly hope that they don't stick him with all of the medical bills as a result of what happened at that pay-per-view. Monday Night Raw last week was the go-home show to the Elimination Chamber for the Raw brand. And if you were on the fence about ordering this pay-per-view, this show did absolutely nothing to make you want to buy the show. Plain and simple, that's the purpose of this show, to make you want to buy the Elimination Chamber. And it was a failure, plain and simple. If you wanted just to watch a TV show for 2 hours and be entertained by some of the hokiest storytelling you've ever seen, then you know what? This show was a rousing success. So let's do the good, the bad, and the ugly quickly here. Chris Jericho and Kofi Kingston had a good little match on Raw Monday night. Jericho won with a code breaker. Nothing overly special, but I am really reaching for good stuff this week, so this makes the cut. Last week, I said that too many people were creaming their undies over the promo that Triple H did on The Undertaker. And I thought it was decent, but by no means this outstanding piece of work that everyone was raving about. But this week was a different story. Triple H hit it out of the ballpark here. He was on his A-game, no pun intended, and actually did something that is rarely done. He outshined Shawn Michaels. Can't say he's been able to do that too many times, but he did on Monday night. I thought Shawn was actually really good. Michaels made his Raw return this week. He seemed to be losing his voice. He didn't sound his best, but he did a pretty damn good job. But Triple H was great in explaining why he doesn't want to face The Undertaker at WrestleMania 28. I thought that part about Undertaker being a brand and the idea of him one day taking over the company, Triple H that is, knowing what's good for business and not wanting to kill that brand was brilliant. Just brilliant. It was a twist I didn't see coming. And it actually makes a lot of sense. You don't have to necessarily like the path they're taking with this storyline, but at least it makes sense. You know, which is more than I can say for 95% of their storylines. So, thumbs up. We also saw Undertaker interrupt again with another video, this time cutting off his hair. Remember what I said last week about that creepy ex-boyfriend vibe? Yeah, well, this did nothing to change my mind on that. But at least now we have a reason why Undertaker has short hair. Or perhaps he'll be completely bald. I am actually quite curious to see what The Undertaker looks like. I don't think he is scheduled to actually be on TV this week, probably in another video. I think The Undertaker is booked to be at Raw Live on the 27th, so I would not look for him to be on TV this week. Let's talk about the bad. There was quite a bit of that, unfortunately, on the show this week. Raw opened this week with a verbal debate. A verbal debate, including all of the participants in the Elimination Chamber match. I was not a fan of the opening of this show with the verbal debate, and apparently neither was most of the so-called WWE Universe, as it was one of the lowest-rated opening quarter hours that I can remember for this show in a long, long time. It did like a 2-point-something. I forgot what the number was. The Punk and Jericho interplay I thought was pretty good, but the R-Truth comedy has just gone so far over the top. It's not even funny anymore. You know, I felt bad for Dolph Ziggler having to stand there and be part of this just wretched segment. Randy Orton and Big Show had a match. It was in the middle of the show and didn't feel special at all, which it should, given that it involved two of the biggest baby faces aside from Sheamus on the SmackDown brand. I mean, you would think a Randy Orton-Big Show match would actually be something meaningful, but it just felt like another match here. Big Show botched an RKO spot towards the end, and he audibly shouted, "Fuck!" in response, which I thought was funny. Randy Orton did not throw one of his signature temper tantrums because, well, he knows that if he did, Big Show would murder him. This match is also where Orton got concussed. I mentioned that earlier. It was supposedly on the belt shot from Daniel Bryan after the match. Bryan whacked him from behind with the title belt, then he whacked Big Show also. It looked to me like Orton may have twisted his knee or his ankle on that botched RKO spot when the Big Show went down. Big Show was not supposed to go down. It kind of caught Orton off guard. He moved. He kind of contorted his body in a weird way. I've got no reason to think they would make up the concussion story. But I do wonder if he also got hurt on that spot. And to the people who think they concocted the concussion story to cover for a knee injury or something, first of all, that makes no sense. Why would they do that? And number two, WWE has a very serious program in place now, the DARE program, to test for concussions and stuff. They take that shit very seriously, head trauma and all that kind of stuff. They would not tease a concussion. They would not tease a head injury just to cover for another injury. I'm not saying they wouldn't do an injury angle claiming that somebody had a concussion, but I'm saying that they wouldn't claim somebody had a concussion instead of just saying, oh, he tweaked his knee. You know, believe me, that's not something they would do. My other question here on this show, where the fuck is Jack Swagger? Ever since he beat Zack Ryder for the U.S. title, I don't think he's appeared, let alone defended the title, a single time on this show. So much for building that championship back up a little bit and making it meaningful again. I thought they had done a pretty good job of that with Zack, and they just completely undid all of that. Better yet, I found myself asking for the second week in a row, where is the Funkasaurus? Where is Brodus Clay? Well, we learned this week that apparently Vince McMahon has decided that Brodus' work is not quite up to par, and he has been taken off television, at least for the time being. There was a match against Heath Slater at the SmackDown tapings a few weeks ago that never did make the airwaves that apparently was his downfall. I don't know, perhaps, if anybody listening to this show was in attendance at the tapings and can write in and let me know how awful that match must have been. I don't remember hearing about Brodus and Heath Slater having a horrific match, but apparently Vince McMahon didn't think it was up to snuff. This is the same Brodus Clay that was killing dudes on Superstars every week while they kept him off television for months trying to figure out what to do with him. Then they finally put him back on TV. Put all of this effort into his character, his entrance. They had the disco ball there, which only lasted about a week before they took him off TV. The whole nine yards. He starts getting over with the audience, and they decide, you know what? His ring work isn't really all that great, so we'll take him off TV. I'm sorry, but as long as you've got the Great Khali on your roster, and he's in the chamber match tonight, no less, you lose the right to play the whole his work isn't good enough card. I mean, for fuck's sake! Here's a new character that actually made the show more fun. It made the show more enjoyable. And again, if this report is true, you know, they go and put the fucking character on ice. It just boggles the mind. Now, it's worth noting on his Twitter account, Brodus actually responded to this news that he's been taken off television by saying, "Don't believe all the hater hype," is what he said, and that Planet Funk is still in orbit. So he didn't actually come out and just deny that these stories are true. He kind of alluded that, hey, don't believe everything you read. Hey, I believe what I see. The character was on television every single week, and all of a sudden he stopped showing up, and now it's been 2 weeks. I tend to believe that he was taken off television. I mean, I guess we'll know for sure if another week goes by without an appearance. But this just made me angry beyond belief when I read this. I wanted to give the character a chance. I still want to give the character a chance. Would I have given him a dancing, goofy character when he came back? Of course not. Everybody was expecting Brodus to come back and kill people. And I think he would have done very well in that role. But given the character they gave him, I thought it was unique. You know, when his music hit and he came out and he did the dancing and the ladies and everything else, it's different. It's unlike anything else they've got right now on Raw or SmackDown. And he seemed to be having fun with it. So I thought to myself, you know what? Let's give it a shot. It was starting to get over. It was different. There's no reason why Brodus can't be in a match and get smacked around a little bit and all of a sudden that mean streak comes out of him. And even though he's got a goofy character, he starts killing people and getting over even more. his character wasn't a career killer for him. I mean, if you keep him off television for 2 months and bring him back, you know, people will remember the Funkasaurus, but after a couple of weeks, it'll be forgotten. So why not let him run with it and see what happens? He was well on his way with that. That's why I said, you know, as far as the Elimination Chamber and replacing Randy Orton, if you were going to go with comedy, Santino is great at that, but Santino doesn't need help in that department. Santino is very good in that role. He's been with the company now for like 5 years, but he's made out to be nothing more than a job guy. That's the role he plays, and Santino is very good at that. Some guys are completely comfortable in that role. They don't have to be the top guy. He plays his role to a T. The reason I figured you would put Brodus Clay in that spot, if you wanted comedy, go with Brodus instead of Santino, is because Brodus needs all the help he can get. Brodus is in the middle of trying to get over. He's a new character. Putting him in a pay-per-view main event match and letting him go out there and entertain and kill some dudes and eliminate somebody will go very far in helping get him over. But obviously it was a moot point because he's not good enough, according to Vince McMahon. The Great Khali can be in the Elimination Chamber match tonight. Give me a fucking break. The Ugly on this show. What more can be said about this John Cena, Zack Ryder, Kane, Eve storyline? I mean, it sucks. I mean, it gets Zack on TV every week, I suppose, which is a plus. But God bless the guy. His YouTube show debuted a year ago this week. He's come a long way since then. But ever since losing the U.S. title, the guy has become a complete joke. I mean, if that's the role you want him to play, then fine. But the neck brace, the back brace, the crutches, the wheelchair, it's also over the top. You can't help but laugh at it. But, you know, here's the problem. This is WWE's top storyline right now. It involves John Cena. The same John Cena challenging The Rock in your WrestleMania main event in less than 2 months. Then again, you know what? These are the same people who booked a WrestleMania main event 10 years ago around a dog named Lucy. So I don't know why I'm so surprised by this. If the end result of this is John Cena embracing the hate, you know, I don't want to hear from people saying, "See, Solomon Monster, the storyline served a purpose. It got John Cena to embrace the hate and turn heel, or got him to embrace the hate and show off his darker side." I don't care. This storyline still sucks, no matter what the outcome. When the camera caught Eve casually walking into the ambulance backstage, then showed Kane standing there until one of the agents gave him the signal to slam the door shut, it was one of the worst cases of quality control I've ever seen on a WWE show. I mean, normally they're pretty good with that sort of thing. You'd expect that out of TNA in the past. But this was just embarrassing. I mean, I don't believe it was done on purpose to show, you know, that Eve is in cahoots with Kane, because even if she is, that doesn't explain Dean Malenko or Arn Anderson or whoever it was giving Kane his cue. I mean, that's just amateur stuff right there. I will say that the bump that Zack took at the end of the show was scary. It was a lot safer than it looked, but it looked bad at first. Even Mick Foley was really concerned on Twitter after it happened. It looked like Ryder's knees and ankles took the brunt of that fall off the stage. You know, knowing that he's okay now, I can say that it was actually a really cool-looking spot. We've seen Ryder take some really awful, phony-looking gimmicked falls in recent weeks. You know, first off that loading dock backstage where he would... Clearly we could see him bounce after being chokeslammed, even though they later made it appear as though he had fallen 10 feet or so. And then that ridiculous chokeslam bump through the metal stage. At least this really looked dangerous. I was impressed. I didn't like Cena doing the X sign, because I just thought that was fucking stupid. And it has nothing to do with the fact that Jesse Sorensen got hurt the night before the TNA pay-per-view. I see some people up in arms about it, how it was in poor taste for WWE to do an injury angle like this after what happened Against All Odds. One doesn't have anything to do with the other. You know, if they had done an injury angle off a moonsault spot, that would be a different story. But one has nothing to do with the other in this case. I think it's a matter of people being overly sensitive and they need to chill the fuck out. This angle wasn't in poor taste because of Jesse Sorensen. It was in poor taste as a wrestling angle. And by the way, some friend John Cena turned out to be. Smooching his best friend's love interest. I like how after slapping Cena across the face, a totally appropriate move given the circumstances, Cena's first reaction is to take off his shirt and his dog tags and tease beating the hell out of his already crippled friend. Hell of a babyface this guy is. If Zack is laying in intensive care right now, I would not allow Cena into his room, or he's liable to turn off his life support. So that was Raw. Overall, not a good show. Actually, a pretty shitty show, with the exception of that Triple H Shawn Michaels segment. Impact, by the way, I did not see all of Impact, but I wanted to make a quick comment about this. Bully Ray is awesome. I've said this before. He came out on this show and he had a bit of a scuffle with a fan. She may have been a plant. It was an older woman in the crowd in the aisleway. He ripped the sign from her hands. There was a brief struggle between the two of them. And I don't know what the sign said, but he ripped it out of her hands and tore the sign to shreds. I thought that was great. Also, at the end of the show, when they did the angle with Brandon Jacobs from the New York Giants, who I thought did a pretty good job, he replaced Jason Pierre-Paul, who was originally going to be the one using the angle. He was kind of a bigger star of this Giants Super Bowl team, and TNA kind of jumped the gun on the announcement. He was not happy about that, backed out. Brandon Jacobs, who was a wrestling fan since he was a kid, he stepped in, and again, he did a hell of a job. He probably did a better job than Jason Pierre-Paul would have done. And they did this angle where he was drinking a beer with James Storm at the end of the show, and Bully Ray sneaks up from behind James Storm and knocks him down, and Bully Ray, being the bully that he is, staying true to his name, starts bullying Brandon Jacobs, takes the beer out of his hand. He says, "I'm going to drink you a beer." And he drinks the beer, and then he spits it in Brandon Jacobs' face. And there's this big brawl, an attempted brawl, I should say. Brandon Jacobs went to go after Bully Ray, shoved him down, and then the agents and the referees came out to restrain this irate football player. And of the agents who came out, we saw Al Snow and D'Lo Brown. And D'Lo, the expression on D'Lo Brown's face, you've got to find a clip of this. D'Lo Brown is holding back Brandon Jacobs, and he's looking. D'Lo is like looking in the direction of Bully Ray, but he's restraining Brandon Jacobs. And D'Lo has this expression on his face, like he cannot believe what is going on. He has the most over-the-top, ridiculously corny expression of shock on his face, but only D'Lo could pull that off. It was hilarious. It was great. This was actually a really cool angle. I guess it continues on the next show. I won't give away what happens, but there will be at least one more Impact appearance for Brandon Jacobs. So if you enjoyed that angle at the end of the show, it's not over yet. So I just wanted to comment on that. I didn't see much else from Impact this week. I wanted to watch Impact and NXT. I've been meaning to watch NXT. I just didn't have the chance, so I just wanted to mention that. WWE made a major announcement this week concerning WrestleMania next year, WrestleMania 29. It is confirmed. It is coming to MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. WrestleMania 29, the date is Sunday, April 7th, 2013, so it's a done deal. There had been a lot of rumors about this. Triple H was spotted at Giants practice. This was back before they won the Super Bowl. And it was just a question of whether or not it was going to take place next year or in 2014. This, to a lot of people, keeps the door open. It keeps hope alive for a Madison Square Garden WrestleMania in 2014. I suppose it's possible. But to me, this announcement here pretty much sealed the fate of that WrestleMania in 2014. I would be stunned if WrestleMania 30 comes to Madison Square Garden. You know, they're basically billing this Mania as New York, New Jersey. You know, Vince McMahon at the press conference said, WrestleMania comes home. You know, they wouldn't be going out of their way to say that, you know, if they were just going to come home anyway the next year for WrestleMania. You know, they're doing it in Jersey at the stadium because they can pack in 60, 70,000 people, make a lot more money, and all other events taking place that weekend, the Hall of Fame, the Access, if they do that breakfast brunch they sometimes do the day of the show, all of that can take place in Manhattan. They could do all that in New York City and just have the actual WrestleMania show in Jersey. And I don't know what their plans are for Raw the next night. Perhaps they can have Raw for Madison Square Garden the night after. I don't know that they're going to do that. But my gut tells me that this basically seals the fate. There will be no MSG Mania in 2014. I don't know that for a fact. It's just my guess. Why come to the Garden? I mean, if that's their attitude, and they're going to have it in the New York area anyway. And for those of you who don't live in New York or in the tri-state area, the tri-state area, as they refer to it, is New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. Having WrestleMania in Jersey, and maybe there are some New Yorkers and Jersey dwellers who would disagree with this, but to me, having WrestleMania in Jersey is basically like having WrestleMania in New York. It would be redundant to do Mania in Jersey one year and have it in New York the next year. You know, they did that once. They had WrestleMania 4 and 5 back-to-back years in Atlantic City. That was through an agreement they had with Donald Trump. That was also 20-plus years ago. I just cannot see them doing that. They have cities bidding on WrestleMania. Cities come to them with proposals on why they should bring WrestleMania. According to Triple H, WWF, WWE, I still call them WWF. Every now and then it's a Freudian slip. WWE still gets these bids and proposals from other cities. They got 15 for WrestleMania next year, and they went with the best one, which they thought was the one in New Jersey. So unless, you know, New York City is going to make one hell of a bid to bring WrestleMania to the Garden and only fit 20,000 people in a building, I just don't see it happening. I mean, it's almost a shame because, you know, those WrestleManias in the arenas, and we really haven't had one since WrestleMania 22 in Chicago. And that Chicago crowd was a hell of a crowd. But the thing about those small buildings is that the acoustics are different. You've got fewer people, but you're in a smaller building, and so it tends to sound louder, unless you have a dead crowd. It gives the shows a different vibe that you don't get in those big stadiums, especially the open-air stadiums. I guarantee you that when WrestleMania is over this year, you're going to have people saying, wow, that crowd sucked. Wow, the Miami crowd sucked. Rock Cena, the supposedly biggest match of all time, didn't really get much of a crowd reaction. Actually, I think that match will get a crowd reaction even on television no matter what. But my point is, you're going to have people who complain about it. I'm going to Mania in Miami, so I'll be able to give a better update as far as how the crowd really is. I bet the crowd in Miami is going to be amped up. You know, I bet the crowd's going to be fired up. But it doesn't necessarily come across that way on television because the acoustics in an open-air stadium, sound travels up. You've got all these people. You've got all this wide open space. It doesn't sound the same. And I think some people think that that's a bad thing. So not having Mania anymore in arenas, you know, that's something that we're just not going to get anymore, for better or worse. I don't know. I mean, it's always better to pack in more people. You make more money that way. You're going to make a lot more money by having 75,000 people as opposed to 25. That's just the way it is. But anyway, WrestleMania, I love how the New York, New Jersey part of the WrestleMania 29 logo was so clearly lifted from the old New York, New Jersey Hitmen logo from the XFL. So the XFL lives on, ladies and gentlemen. It is not dead. Speaking of WrestleMania 29, that turns talk to what the main event perhaps will be. The Rock was at the press conference. He said he would be at WrestleMania 29. He didn't say he would be wrestling. In fact, somebody asked him point blank, are you going to be wrestling? And The Rock was kind of caught off guard. He said, I'm not going to tell you that. I think because The Rock just doesn't know. You know, I've heard that there's going to be a three-match series. WrestleMania this year is the first Cena Rock match. Then the next one is going to be at SummerSlam. Then the rubber match will be at WrestleMania next year. Possible. I doubt it. I don't see them doing the same match 2 years in a row. They did it with Undertaker Shawn Michaels. They're doing it with Undertaker Triple H. I would think that Rock would want to move on to somebody else. He would want to work with somebody else, but who knows? But he'll be there. The question is, what's the main event going to be? And I posted a mocked-up photo that somebody put together online of Stone Cold Steve Austin and CM Punk. All talk now is going to turn to Stone Cold because it's pretty much a foregone conclusion. Austin's going to come back. Austin has said he can come back. He would like to come back. The situation and the money and everything would have to be right. And as the story goes, he was certainly considering coming back this year in Miami at WrestleMania. Was talked out of it by some people close to him because they said to him, and rightfully so, you already have The Rock coming back at WrestleMania this year. Rock vs. Cena is the main event. Nothing else will usurp Rock vs. Cena as the main event. Even if you had Austin vs. CM Punk this year, it would be number two. Even for the people who would like to think that's the real main event, they would rather see Austin vs. Punk. It doesn't matter. Rock vs. Cena is going to be positioned as the number one match. It was announced a year ago. It's going to be built up as the biggest WrestleMania main event of all time. Stone Cold Steve Austin is one of the biggest stars in the history of the business, and quite frankly, if he's going to come back and have his first match in over 10 years, he deserves to do that and have top billing. He deserves to come back and have you know, the main event slot. You know, next year will actually be exactly 10 years since his last match at WrestleMania 19, so there you go. You've got the built-in story of a decade later, 10 years later, to the very show where he had his last match and lost to The Rock. He went out in a losing effort. Austin returns. And whether it's against CM Punk or if it's against Brock Lesnar or if it's against whoever it may be, I think having Austin, saving Austin for Mania next year makes a lot of sense. But does it make sense to put him in the ring with CM Punk? Do you think that Austin versus CM Punk is a worthy WrestleMania main event or co-main event? Even, you know, maybe they'll have another big match next year with somebody else as well. You know, to me, one very important thing would have to change. You could do Austin versus Punk right now if you wanted to, and it would be a big match. But to me, CM Punk has to be the heel going into that match. Punk, I think, prefers to work as a heel. Punk, I think, is a much better heel. But you have Steve Austin coming back. Austin should not have to compete for cheers with the person that he's in the ring with. If you've got this great segment on Raw, let's say, to build up the match a couple of weeks before WrestleMania, Austin face-to-face with CM Punk, the crowd should not be split 50-50. The crowd should be firmly behind Stone Cold Steve Austin. Punk has to be the heel going into that match, and Punk right now is one of the top babyfaces in the company. You know, his merchandise sales are neck and neck with Cena. Right now they are neck and neck. You know, to the people that said, oh, you know, punk was only in, you know, selling more merchandise that first month, and now, you know, things are back to normal. Not the case. You know, he sells a lot of merchandise. He's still very much over with the audience. When you look at the lay of the land at WWE right now and who the top babyfaces are, Punk is right there at the top. If he's not number one, he's number two. And so this is not the right time to turn him, but you've now got a year. You've got 1 year to do something with him and to turn him. And I just think the timing would work out a lot better. If you turn him, I think Austin versus Punk is the way to go. I know Brock Lesnar wants to match with Steve Austin. If he comes back, he would like to face Stone Cold. Austin versus Lesnar would be a big match too, but I don't think it would mean as much to this audience as Austin versus Punk. Punk is somebody who is over now as a star currently. You know, Brock used to be a star. Now, CM Punk is a star. He is the man in WWE. And I don't know that the current audience, quite frankly, I don't know that Austin versus Lesnar would mean nearly as much. Plus, you're taking two guys who are not on the active WWE roster. You're taking two guys from the outside and putting them in a match. Who cares? You know, you got to put somebody in there against Austin or against Lesnar who the audience knows and has already invested in. Take a current star and either help elevate him. And by the way, that doesn't mean Punk has to beat Austin. In fact, if you do Austin versus Punk, Austin has to win that match. To me, Austin has to win the match. I don't think Punk would even care. I think Punk would love to eat a stunner and do the job for Steve Austin. He'd be getting the rub. I mean, it'd be the biggest match of his life. You could still get over even without winning the match. But that's why I think Austin versus Punk would be a much better choice than Austin versus Lesnar. You could do Lesnar versus Undertaker if you wanted to. If Undertaker doesn't call it quits after this year's Mania, wants to keep going, there's no reason Undertaker can't go 21-0, 22-0. But anyway, that's a question that'll be answered later on. I've had people ask me, do you think they're going to announce Austin versus Punk or whatever the main event is? Do you think they're going to announce it a year in advance like they did this year? I don't. Nor do I think that's a good idea. I don't think you have to announce your main event at a year in advance every single time out. This was a special thing with Rock vs. Cena. Austin vs. Punk, there's no reason you can't wait until 3 or 4 months, you know, before Mania to start planting the seeds. You know, nothing wrong with that. Governor Chris Christie stated at the press conference that WrestleMania would bring in over $62 million in revenue to the Garden State. I don't know how they calculate these numbers. I would love to know the math behind it. I'm not saying they're wrong, that they're making it up. I'm just saying I wonder how they come to that number. If they take kind of the average number of people that have attended the most recent three WrestleManias and then divide that number. I don't know how they come up with it. I would love to know the science behind the math here. But that's a very impressive number, and that right there is why these cities want WrestleMania to come to their city. Because it brings in a lot of money at a time when a lot of these places are suffering, and they can use that cash infusion. They can use the infusion of tourism and jobs and everything else that comes along with WrestleMania. So it's a very big deal. It really is. So that's WrestleMania 29. Now, as far as whether I'm going to go to WrestleMania, you would think, I live in New York, why wouldn't I go? I would plan on going. I certainly would want to go. Even if I didn't go to Mania itself, I certainly would hit up the Hall of Fame and Access and Ring of Honor and any and all other wrestling events in the area. It's going to be a lot of fun. But you know, you've got the issue of doing an outdoor WrestleMania on the East Coast in New Jersey in April. It's a risk. You know, I think I saw somebody look up the last like 5 years of weather forecasts in New Jersey for the date of April 7th. Not that it means anything unless you believe in the Farmer's Almanac and all that, but over the last couple of years, there hasn't been any, I don't believe there's been any snow. There's been mostly rain and overcast skies. And, you know, rain is something that you just got to deal with. They're going to build a structure over the ring. You know, it's not going to be like that famous match from, it was on one of the Hulk Hogan DVDs. Hogan had a match in Puerto Rico once with John Studd. It was just an absolute torrential downpour to where these guys were slipping and sliding all over the ring. Believe me, that's not going to happen in WrestleMania. The wrestlers will be protected. The fans, if they have to, will have to bring umbrellas. They'll have to layer up if it's not that warm out. Just to give some perspective, there was a day in early April a couple of years ago in New York where it was like 70 degrees. You know, I think for the most part it's in the 40s or the 50s. With the weather the way it is, I mean, who the hell knows? I mean, we haven't even had winter. It's February 19th, and we haven't really had more than like 2 days of winter this entire season. It's going to be in the 50s all week here in New York. It's crazy. Who knows? Maybe next April it's going to snow every day. I think that'd be pretty cool, actually, having a snowstorm at WrestleMania. Anyway, Chris Hero got his new name this week down in developmental. Cassius Ohno is the new name for Chris Hero. It's kind of funny, actually, because Ohno was the first reaction I had when I read that name. Really, you know, it's not as bad as Dolph Ziggler or Michael McGillicuddy, but still, Cassius Ohno? Really? I mean, even if Hero came up with that one himself, that's the best you can do. Maybe you can go get Sonny Ohno to manage him. You can take pictures as he comes down to the ring. It's an old WCW joke for those of you that get it. Cassius is a cool name, but why not something like Chris Cassius? I'm sure he'll be fine either way. I mean, apparently he's going to use the same knockout gimmick he's been using in Ring of Honor for years, hence the KO initials in his new name and the KO profile picture on his Twitter account. But, yeah, who knows? I mean, maybe it catches on and it ends up working for him. You know, great talent can overcome shitty names. And this guy's got loads of it, so he's going to be a big star either way. Here's a story I wanted to talk about this week. We have yet another glaring example of why social media will be the downfall of certain wrestlers. This is something, again, that I wanted to comment on. It's based on a video that got posted several days ago and has since been taken down, wisely taken down. WWE released a wrestler down in developmental earlier this month by the name of Peter Orlov, who is better known as Alex Kozlov. He had been down at FCW since 2010. He came over from the AAA promotion down in Mexico, where he had made a nice name for himself. He was also the guy they used in those early Sin Cara videos, doing spots with him in the ring. They used him because they knew he was a good worker. Anyway, on Thursday night, he released a video on his YouTube account where he ranted about being released. Then he sat down on his couch, pulled out a handgun, and pretended to shoot himself in the head, complete with fake blood and gunshot sound effects. He then collapsed onto his couch off camera, and the remaining 15 minutes of the video was nothing but the couch. Nothing but silence, because you see, we were supposed to believe that he killed himself. Anyway, he took the link down the next day. I don't even think the video was up for 24 hours, but it was up. I saw it, and a lot of other people saw it. And he took it down much the same way Matt Hardy did when he teased his own suicide. Look, I didn't find it funny when Matt Hardy did it, and I didn't find this amusing either. Even if you didn't work in an industry with such a high rate of young deaths, many coming by way of suicide, what would possess a sane, rational human being to think that this would actually be a good way to get noticed? Yeah, I noticed the guy. I noticed what a fucking idiot he is. I mean, what's worse is that, you know, if he's doing this to look for work, to, like, try to get attention. Hey, I'm over here. Don't forget me. I don't have the heart to tell him that TNA already had a wrestler named Suicide. Oh, boy. For every Zack Ryder who actually uses YouTube or social media to his benefit, there are five Alex Kozlovs. I swear to God. I mean, if he's really that distraught about being released, he needs to get over it. And if he's just doing it for fun, he's even more delusional than he comes off in the video. I can see why WWE would wash their hands of this guy. I'm not quite sure why they let him go, but after looking at this video, I can kind of figure it out. And if you didn't get to see the video, don't worry. It's not worth your time. It's actually quite disturbing, to be honest with you. That's why it's no longer up. But I just wanted to comment on this because it's not the last time, it's not the first time we're ever going to see this kind of thing. Like I said, when Matt Hardy posted a video, it was of some text on a screen that would lead you to believe that he was going to do something very very evil, to the point where his own friends and family called the cops to go down to his house to check on him. And this fucking guy is going to sit on a couch after complaining about being released and this and that, and he's going to actually put on camera, he puts a gun to his head and adds in these visual effects to make it look as though he shot himself in the head. And we're supposed to react in what way? I have no idea. Am I supposed to laugh? Am I supposed to find this funny? Am I supposed to find this humorous? Give me a break. Now, one more random news bit here before we get to the shout-outs and questions. And I thought this was just too great to pass up mentioning here. Apparently, John Morrison may be getting into stand-up comedy. John Morrison and stand-up comedy. He will be part of an improv comedy show on February 25th, so that's next Saturday, called Saturday Night's Main Event at Second City in Hollywood. He's also apparently looking at starting a comedy career in Hollywood. John Morrison as a stand-up comedian. I just can't picture that. I really can't. I can't picture it. But hey, maybe in that environment he actually does well for himself. I don't know. I just know that the only thing I ever ragged on the guy for was his promo ability. I thought he sucked. He is a terrible promo guy. And now you're talking about standing up in front of an audience and doing stand-up comedy? This I have to see. I may have to fly myself out to Hollywood just to see this show. It's time for some sound-off shout-outs here and the mailbag. If you have questions to send in to me, you may do so by emailing me at thesolomonster@gmail.com. thesolomonster@gmail.com, all one word. First off, my thanks to The Game Zero for leaving the 50th review for the sound-off in iTunes. Also, a big shout-out to Roger Barrow for his kind words on there as well. If you leave a review of the show, you too can get a shout-out from the Solo Monster. I push the iTunes thing because it really does help bring in new listeners. So take 2 minutes of your time, if you would be so kind, and show your support on iTunes. Now, let's get to some shout-outs here from you guys. James asked for a shout-out for his mother, Lori, who passed away recently. They used to listen to the sound-off together. Obviously, my condolences. That's actually a really cool thing that the two of you would listen to the show together. I love hearing stuff like that. And again, I'm very sorry to hear that. Jason wanted a shout out for his good friend Andy, who celebrated a birthday on Valentine's Day. That's got to suck, having to buy shit for your wife and it's your birthday. Anyway, he keeps telling Andy about the sound off and how he should listen. Well, I hope so, after I gave him this shout out here. Chris from Edinburgh wanted a shout-out. His birthday is today, February 19th, and he said his awesome girlfriend, Lauren, is taking him to Amsterdam for the big day. I love how, in my notes here, I actually added an N at the end of Amsterdam. So instead of Amsterdam, it's Amsterdam, as it should be. That's quite the awesome girlfriend that you got there, Chris. I don't know too many others that would take their boyfriend to Amsterdam, of all places. That seems to be tempting fate, but have a good time. Cathal from Ireland, who hosts his own movie review page on Facebook. For those of you movie buffs out there, it's type in Cat Halo Movies. Cathal is celebrating a birthday today as well, February 19th, so happy birthday to him. He also wants to give a shout-out of his own to the guys on the Solomonster Facebook page. He says, I usually end up watching pay-per-views on my own, as my friends generally don't watch them live, and my wife genuinely hates wrestling. So interacting with the people on Facebook really adds to my enjoyment of the shows. Thanks, lads, he says. And I'll be talking to you Sunday night. Udit Sharma from Delhi, India writes in. He popped his sound off cherry with episode 156. And now, 50 episodes later, he was hoping to get his first shout out. Well, you just got it, my friend. Craig from Norwich, England wanted a shout out. He's celebrating a birthday next Sunday, February 26th. And lastly, Jim, who is celebrating a birthday on March 9th, a little further in advance, but writing in now because he will not be around for his birthday. Was hoping he can get an early shout-out, so there you go. So if you've got anything like that you want to send to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com is the place to do it. Let's get into your questions here. This first one comes from Ryan D. Dear Solomonster, what do you think of the death of Whitney Houston and how the media coverage compares to the death of Michael Jackson? I knew this question was going to come. I just knew it. That episode 75 rant that I did is going to live on in infamy. It's just amazing. I think it's a very sad situation. You know, she was a very talented performer. She had one of the best voices of all time. She made some poor choices and paid the price for it. I mean, I feel most sorry for her teenage daughter, who's now got to go on without a mother. I mean, that stinks. And as far as the media coverage, it hasn't been nearly the circus it was for Michael Jackson, but it's still pretty bad. I mean, I can't stand these media outlets that in some cases choose to ignore her own misgivings and instead lay blame for her problems on everyone else, including her scuzzball husband. I mean, and don't get me wrong, Bobby Brown was a bad influence, and to borrow a phrase once used by the great Stone Cold Steve Austin, generally, he comes across as the slimy substance that runs out of the south end of a chicken. But that seems to always be the case with celebrities. Anyone and everyone. Everyone else is to blame for their problems. It's never their own fault. You know, as though these people are somehow incapable of making their own choices in life. I mean, nobody forced her to reach for the crack pipe all those times. You know? When you wash down some Xanax with an alcohol chaser, if that is in fact what happened here, you're just asking for trouble. I'm sorry, but you are. You know, but she was a beautiful lady, a beautiful voice. I was a fan of her music, and it's a shame she died so young. I mean, I only wish, to kind of wrap pro wrestling around this package here, I only wish pro wrestlers were extended the same respect that she seems to be getting from the media, except for TMZ, which at least TMZ is consistent in its scumbaggery of celebrities. Yeah, I realize that guys like Brian Pillman, who also died young in his hotel room, and Eddie Guerrero, who died young in his hotel room while brushing his teeth, and Kurt Hennig, who died young in his hotel room, you know, none of them were the global superstars on the same scale as Whitney Houston, but it gets old when they brand these things as just another case of some roided-up pro wrestler, no doubt dying from too many steroids. No real attention is paid to the career they had or the life they led. It's just another statistic, another fake wrestler dead from drugs. I don't know. I just wish wrestlers would be extended the same courtesy as opposed to the sneering and snickering that we typically see in the media. So that was just a thought that struck me in seeing some of the coverage of Whitney Houston's death. But, you know, to be fair, overall, it's just a sad story. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. It's a sad story, a young life wasted, and a child now that has no mother, which is very, very, very sad. This question comes from James. I was wondering what you think of Jeff Jarrett. He won the title in WCW a few times, and a lot of people still don't see him as a main eventer. Do you see him as a main guy or a mid-card guy? I see him personally as an upper mid-card guy. I have never seen Jeff Jarrett as a true bona fide main eventer. In TNA, because he was always, you know, part of the fabric of that company, you know, him and his father helped found it, of course, he put himself in the main event. And to me, all those times Jeff Jarrett was in a pay-per-view main event in TNA don't mean shit, because, of course, he was in power. Anybody can put themselves in the main event. But in WCW, you know, he was always very good friends with Vince Russo, who I talked about a little bit earlier. Another one of those reasons why Russo was around in the early days of TNA was through his friendship with Jeff Jarrett. And Russo put Jarrett over for the title. I don't think Jarrett had his first world title run in WCW until Russo came along, although I could be wrong about that. And he's a fine performer, but to me, he's just not a main eventer. It's just the way I've always viewed him. I've never viewed him as a real, true main event guy. And he was never a main event guy in WWE. He'll complain that, you know, maybe he never got a fair share. There was some heat with him and Steve Austin, which supposedly dates back to the days when Austin worked for his father's territory for Jerry Jarrett, and his payoffs were terrible, and they treated him badly, and so on and so forth. But, yeah, no, I just never looked at Jarrett as a main event guy. I never did. And, you know, he's been rather entertaining before he left television when he was doing his thing with Karen, his new wife Karen, on Impact and all that. Very funny stuff. You know, but just not a main event guy to me. This question comes from The Phantom, who apparently forgot to include his real name in his email. Please do so going forward. Happy Valentine's Day. Hope you had a good one. My question is kind of WrestleMania themed. I had an idea. Been stewing for a while, and since I'm listening to episode 205, I figured I'd spout it out to you. Instead of the stupid angle where former world champions only get to compete in the Money of the Bank, which was, by the way, that was a rumor. I don't know that they're doing a Money in the Bank match at WrestleMania exclusively with former world champions, but he is alluding to that here in his email. He says, why not put 6 to 8 FCW stars, such as Antonio Cesaro, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, etc., put them in the match, have them fight for a WWE contract. It would give the audience a chance to see these new talents and let them choose what brand they want to be on, have them come out and target the champ like Sheamus did to Cena. To me, it sounds like a good idea. I like the premise of letting the new guys show their stuff. I don't like the idea and execution. You know, taking a bunch of unknown guys and putting them on a WrestleMania show would go over with the crowd about as well as a fart in church, I think. You know, second, you want at least some of those guys to have their own distinct debut, whether it's with a gimmick or not. You know, putting them all on television at once, I think, would kill that opportunity. I'm also tired of having guys, let alone FCW guys in this case, you know, win a match like Money in the Bank. You know, in my email back to Phantom, I kind of mentioned I didn't want them to be in a Money in the Bank match and go on to face the world champion. You know, I made a mistake there. He, in his email, he was talking about fighting for a contract and not a title shot. But still, I just don't think this is the way to go about doing it. I think the gimmick has gotten old very fast. I would rather, as I said to him, I would rather take a guy like a Seth Rollins, for example. And if you wanted to debut him in a multiple-man match, okay, and really make him stand out, don't put him with 5 or 6 other FCW guys in a Money in the Bank match at WrestleMania. Do it, you know, do it, let's say, on an episode of Raw. Have a random battle royal. It doesn't have to be a ladder match. featuring a bunch of indie guys. You bring them in for one show. You have no intent on signing these guys, although who knows, maybe one of them will impress you. But you put Seth Rollins in there almost as a ringer. Okay, so Rollins is in there with the rest of these unknown guys. And still, the crowd may not really get into it because they don't know who any of these people are. But the point is, you've got Rollins in there with all these nobodies, and you use it as a showcase for the guy. Let him toss a couple of dudes. He can show off some of his key moves. He can win the whole thing, obviously, and earn himself a spot on the roster in the process. The whole point of having this battle royal on Raw, you know, maybe it's Jean Laurinaitis is part of his new talent initiative, like Teddy Long used to have a new talent initiative on SmackDown. I don't know if he still does or not. So Johnny Ace comes out one week and says, tonight we're going to have a battle royal with a bunch of young up-and-comers who are trying to compete for a spot on the Raw roster. You know, that's the logic behind it. And again, Seth Rollins wins the whole thing. And I just think that would be a far more effective way to go to get some of these guys noticed. And, of course, it doesn't have to be Seth Rollins. You know, you may have people out there who know Seth Rollins. You may have some Ring of Honor fans in the audience, and they kind of see it, and they're like, oh, you know, of course he's going to win. So maybe instead of Seth Rollins, you do it with somebody a little less predictable, like a Richie Steamboat. You know, I don't think too many people out there even know what Richie Steamboat looks like unless they watch FCW every week. Kyle writes into the show, "Dear Solomoser, love your show, been a loyal listener since episode 1, also a member of the Fatal 4-Way. This year I got to attend the Elimination Chamber in Milwaukee," so I guess Kyle is at the show tonight. "Got me thinking, what is the greatest moment you have seen at a live show? It can be a live show, Raw, SmackDown, or pay-per-view." He says, "I haven't had a lot of live experience, as WWE goes, as they do not make it to the Wisconsin area very often, but I have gotten to see some shows here, even the failure that was the first Taboo Tuesday, or when SmackDown came to Wisconsin. My favorite live moments have to be from SummerSlam 99, when The Body, that being Jesse Ventura, refused to give Triple H the 3 count, and then threw Shane McMahon like a rag doll out of the ring and said, 'That's for your old man, you SOB.' Actually, he said, 'That's for your old man, you little bastard,' but that's nitpicking there. As far as live moments are concerned, you know, I have been to a ton of Raw shows over the years, and I think one or two SmackDowns and a couple of pay-per-views. I'm hoping that WrestleMania this year will give me plenty of moments to look back on, since I'll be there. But I think back to the Royal Rumble show I was at Madison Square Garden in 2008. There were two things on that show. First, Ric Flair had a match, I think it opened the show, against MVP. And that was significant because that was Ric Flair's final Madison Square Garden match. I think it's safe to say that Ric Flair will never again have another wrestling match at MSG, and so that to me was special. And also that night in the Rumble match, you know, say what you want to about John Cena, God knows I do, but I will give WWE a lot of credit, as I did back then, I think. That was a huge surprise. That was a huge coup they played off, having Cena as the surprise number 30 entrant in the Rumble. Nobody was expecting it. I wasn't expecting it. And the crowd just exploded. Again, it was kind of funny because once Cena actually got into the ring and the music stopped, people realized, hey, we're supposed to boo this guy. And then the boos just rained down upon this poor guy. But from the moment his music hit to the moment he came out and went into the ring, the place was electric. And it was one of those rare surprises. You know, you really are rarely shocked by things anymore. And that was a really cool moment. So to me, that stands out. That Rumble 2008 event for me stands out above the rest. Cathal wanted to know, are there any wrestlers that I never saw work live that I wish I had? He says, I never saw The Rock or Austin wrestle live. I saw them on the microphone, but not fight. But I've seen just about all the others that I care for, thanks to regular wrestling shows in Ireland. Honestly, no. I can't think of one name in particular. I pretty much saw all the important ones to me. You know, as a kid, I saw Hogan, I saw Savage, I saw Bret Hart, I saw Shawn Michaels. I've seen Austin and Rock live a bunch of times. And as I said, even Ric Flair, you know, in his last Madison Square Garden match. So all the wrestlers that I probably would want to see live, I pretty much have already seen them. Jacob Pig writes in, he wants to know, where do I think the CM Punk vs. Jeff Hardy TLC Championship match at SummerSlam 2009 ranks on my top TLC matches? I don't have a list of top TLC matches. I'd have to go back and look at all the different ones that have taken place. But to me, from the ones I remember anyway, Punk vs. Hardy was pretty damn good. It would probably be way up there. But to me, TLC 2 from WrestleMania 17 and TLC 3 from SmackDown, both of which were tag team TLCs. WrestleMania 17, it was Edge and Christian, the Hardys, and the Dudleys. And I believe it was Edge and Christian, the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho. which actually was probably the SmackDown taping right after they beat Austin and Triple H for the tag belts back in 01. But those two TLC matches, to me, are the best ones. And I would also put, I think, was it Miz and Lawler had a TLC match? That first match they had on Raw might have been a TLC, or it was either a straight ladder match or a TLC match. The Ric Flair-Edge TLC match, for other reasons, I thought was tremendous. Punk and Hardy wouldn't be at the top of the list, but it would be up there among the best. Stewart wants to know, why did the Ric Flair co-owner of Raw storyline end? I thought it was interesting and thought it ended too soon. What did you think of that particular angle? I thought it was pretty good. That also, you know, ended before it probably should have. I think the reason it ended, if I remember correctly, was because of the situation with Steve Austin. They had plans with Austin, and Austin walked out of the company. This would have been around June of 2002. And WWE went into a panic. That's when they hot-shotted that Ric Flair-Vince McMahon match on Raw. And they basically put Flair's control of the company, I think, up for grabs. And Vince won the whole thing, and that was it. You know, Flair was basically just another wrestler after that. I think he took Austin's place at the King of the Ring pay-per-view for what was supposed to be Austin's match against Eddie Guerrero. So Austin leaving threw everything in a state of flux. They panicked. They hot-shotted everything away on one episode of Raw. And yeah, that was pretty much the end of it at that point. But they could have done a lot more with it, obviously. This question comes from Joel. Wants to know, in my opinion, what is the best and worst matches for the show of shows? He says, mine surprisingly come from the same WrestleMania. Best one has to go to Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 21, while the worst has to be Big Show versus Akebono in their awful sumo match on the same show. Would love to hear your thoughts. Well, it's kind of funny you mentioned that your choices for best and worst come from the same WrestleMania, because mine also come from the same WrestleMania. My best favorite top WrestleMania match of all time, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker at WrestleMania 25. I love that match. I can watch that. I can go back and watch that match a million times. Kind of like I do with the 92 Royal Rumble, in fact. That match, to me, was everything that pro wrestling should be. It just clicked on every conceivable level. I had been waiting years and years and years for them to put these two guys back together since their feud from 1997. And they had great matches even then. But that WrestleMania 25 match was just something to behold. And ironically, on the same show, WrestleMania 25, they had a 25 Diva Battle Royal. And if I remember correctly, they even brought in some old divas from the past. I think Molly Holly was in there, and I think Tori may have been in there, and they had to, because they didn't have 25 actual divas on the current roster, nor do they now, I think. But you would think that in a battle royal like that, that would be kind of cool to have divas from the past clashing with divas from the present. Very reminiscent in some ways of that gimmick battle royal they did at WrestleMania 17. But instead, this thing was basically treated as a joke. It was maybe 5 minutes, if that, and they had, the big gag here was that Santino Marella was dressed in drag, and he was in there, and he won the Battle Royal as Santina. It became Ms. WrestleMania, and I think it got a big pop and all that, and it just sucked. It outright sucked. It was a waste of time. I don't really remember liking it, and even thinking back to it now, I think it's just stupid. Just really dumb. And again, it's in good company, because there's been a lot of stinkers at WrestleMania. You think to Undertaker and Giant Gonzalez at WrestleMania 9, and there have been some matches that were very brief. I mean, I remember Terry Taylor and Bobby Heenan had a match at WrestleMania 5 that went like 30 seconds, probably as it should have. That first WrestleMania, actually the second WrestleMania, had some pretty bad matches too. But this Women's Battle Royal at WrestleMania 25 could have been so much more. And it was a colossal waste of time. It was a joke. And so, yeah. Last question this week comes from Corey L. Dear Solomonster, what do you think of China's latest movie, where she has sex with porn stars dressed up as pro wrestlers, and would you watch it? You know, I think I would. I'm curious to see if these guys can pull the characters off. I think it would be hilarious, actually. Maybe I could even review it for the podcast. We could do a... That would certainly give new meaning to the term match anatomy now, wouldn't it? You know, I saw where they were doing impersonations of Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and Sergeant Slaughter and I think the Iron Sheik. And I just want to know where the Bret Hart imposter is for the obvious punchline. You know, where China kind of gets up and says, Vince didn't screw Bret, but I did. And then, you know, we could pretty much figure out what happens at that point. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, I have to say those photos that originally appeared on TMZ.com of the porn stars dressed up as Hogan and Flair and the rest of them totally killed my childhood dead. I mean, I will never again be able to look back on those fond days of the Hulkster and the Nature Boy and the rest of them quite the same way, thanks to this new movie that China is starring in. So, you know, as far as my thoughts on her actually doing it, hey, she's got to make money somehow, right? When she's not hooking, she's filming movies. So maybe she can be up for one of those awards that they have out in Vegas, the AVN Awards, right? Maybe she's trying to win an AVN Award. Good luck with that. On that horrific note, we're going to close out the mailbag for this week. But as always, you can email me at thesolomonster@gmail.com with any and all questions, comments, shout-outs, and the like. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster. I may be doing some live blogging, if not for the pay-per-view tonight, for events coming up in the future. Certainly for WrestleMania weekend when I'm down in Miami, you'll want to follow me on Twitter and Facebook. So get on there, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. You can also subscribe to the show in iTunes. And a quick note on iTunes, by the way, I haven't mentioned this before, but I may as well mention it now because I'm 99% sure that when I go to upload the show this week, there's going to be some sort of issue with Podbean because Podbean is the absolute dirt fucking worst in terms of web hosting and file sharing, whatever the hell it is they do. I actually pay for the service, by the way, and I don't know if it's an issue of too many people downloading the show because when my page is down, other people's pages are still up. But I can't seem to get a straight answer out of these guys, and it's not as easy as just kind of ditching Podbean and going to another service, in part because of the iTunes link. And it's not as easy as just switching the link out, you know, so if I go to another service and just kind of replace the link, I may well lose control of the name of the show by doing that, and I don't want that to happen, so I'm kind of stuck where we are right now. So when the show doesn't go up right away in iTunes, more often than not, it's because Podbean is down. And there's no rhyme or reason for it. You know, it'll go down for an hour, 6 hours, 12 hours, and then it'll just pop right back up. Unfortunately, there's nothing I can do to help that. I would still say subscribe in iTunes because it really is the easiest way. But just for those of you who may have been a little bit curious why the show doesn't always pop up on iTunes as quickly as it does on SE Scoops, that's the reason why. It's completely out of my control. It infuriates me. It pisses me off. I'm trying to address the situation, so I just wanted to make everybody aware of that. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel as well. My username on there is TheSolomonster, all one word. I'll be putting up some more vintage sound offs in the near future, possibly episode number 3 of the sound off from 2007. Could be going up as early as this week. And as always, those will, going forward, they will be YouTube exclusives, those vintage episodes will be, so you'll want to get on there and check that out. And that about wraps it up for episode 206. Enjoy Elimination Chamber this weekend. If you're listening to this podcast and the chamber has already passed us by, well, I don't know what to tell you. But we'll be right back here next weekend with episode 207. As always, thank you guys so much for your support. Without your support, of course, we wouldn't be here right now. So keep spreading the good word of the sound off. I'm always welcoming in new listeners, whether it's family, friends, enemies, what have you. So keep on supporting the show. I very much appreciate it. We'll be back right here next week. Until then, be well, stay safe. And one last parting shot to Mr. Russo. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. See you next time.
Let me tell you something, fella. This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster sounds off on SEScoops.com.